Welcome to BoobTube, where two chicks talk speculative fiction. This is Heather Long. I'm here with Shireen Nicole, and it's my turn to talk.
Yay!
Fun. Tonight, we're going to talk about just a handful of things, particularly Once Upon a Time, Haven, and Revolution. We've also got some big premieres coming up this week with Arrow, The Vampire Diaries, and Beauty and the Beast. Yeah, I have some high hopes for Vampire Diaries. And I definitely have high hopes for Arrow. Not so sure what I'm thinking about Beauty and the Beast yet. And we'll share with you our rundown of some of our favorite quotes and, you know, what has happening on other episodes. And, of course, we need to have a little moment of silence for Stargate SG-1. In the meanwhile, be prepared. Spoilers, darling.
Yes, this is the bonus round. Bing, 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 bing. We're doing two episodes this week because there's so much to cover. So I will let Heather guide us through the wonderful world of Storybrooke.
Once upon a time, I have to say, after such a bang up episode last week with the show returning, I was a small fraction of a bit disappointed in episode two. And I'll tell you why. I mean, really, it was good. It was a good episode, but it lacked the punch from week one. It took us back into the Wicked Queen's history with her mother, who, wow. I'm sorry, you know, if you wanted to nominate someone for Queen Bitch of the Universe, Cora wins that prize hands down.
Barbara Hershey is a beast.
Yes, she is. I mean, and she plays it so deliciously and so cold and so wicked, and I love it. I love it.
You know what my favorite part was? The idea that Regina is the child that was taken from Rumpelstiltskin in the original tale. I love that.
Yeah, I love that too. And I love the fact that it was very neatly slid in there.
Yes.
That he was the child delivered to Cora. So that Cora's not actually her mother. The same way she's not biologically Henry's mother.
Wait, I thought that Cora is actually her mother, but I thought we were going into the classic tale of Rumpelstiltskin, where Cora was a princess having a baby, and well, not having a baby, but needed to save her life by spinning straw into gold. Rumpelstiltskin comes along with the book, teaches her how, and she promises him her firstborn child. She reneges on the deal, as we know from the original story, and now Rumpelstiltskin has finally gotten Regina back. She's that baby.
Oh, see, now I didn't get that at all.
That's totally what I got.
Cool. I got that he held her in his arms and that he delivered her to her mother. And I got this impression that he had taken Regina from someone else, which would explain why Regina was so sweet and nice in the beginning. You know, back, you know, before her laundry got tumbled. But I don't know. See, now that's something to actually kick back and watch for. I did like that Rumpelstiltskin set Cora up for a fall, but I also thought he was doing it in large part to tempt Regina down a darker path because, you know, Rumpel's always got an agenda.
Right. And
there's a big thing here is that we don't... Hear the dog.
Yeah, the dogs are going crazy. Hi, folks. The dogs are guest hosts this week.
Let these dogs know this is not a dog's tale. Anyway, back to Once Upon a Time for a moment. I didn't get that at all. But that doesn't mean it isn't here. I'll have to go back and rewatch that now and see if that's what I hear.
Okay.
Other big things for this episode with me really was David Nolan's character. The huge story is Regina and the moment of love that she shares with Henry and the fact that she's willing to let Henry go back to Charming after. And let's pause for a moment to all admire the Charming kicking in the door with sword in hand. That was hot. And it was nice to have Charming there in Storybrooke because I found David Nolan to be so wishy-washy from the moment he woke up.
He has never been charming on this show, but for the first time, he's intrepid, which is a great improvement.
I like him in the fairy tale world.
Yes.
I did not like him in Storybrooke. So that speech that he gives...
That was a great writer's nod to that.
It was. I wanted to reach out and kiss a writer and say, thank you. Thank you very much for acknowledging the fact that David Nolan is a pansy ass that I don't like and making him be charming, particularly with the line, David Nolan is weak. And I've had to accept that. He's weak and he hurt the woman I love, but he's also me.
Yeah.
Beautifully done. Absolutely. You know, hats off to that. Speaking of hats off, we had a blink and you'll miss it Jefferson appearance this week. And he was mad as a hatter. Sorry, I had to say it.
He was great.
He was great. And he did let David know that the Enchanted Forest was still there. That's
which,
good.
A fact that he did confirm with Regina later in the show.
Yes, and that Regina didn't want to tell him, and that she and Rumple were still keeping that a secret. Why, we don't know. I like that, I think we have confirmation, too, from this episode with Regina shoving her mother through the looking glass, that Cora is indeed the Queen of Hearts, which was what I guess she was last season when Regina, well, actually, in the first episode, we met Jefferson in.
Oh, I didn't think about that. You're very right.
Yeah, Regina tricked Jefferson into taking her into Wonderland so that she could rescue her father from the Queen of Hearts and brought her father out, left Jefferson trapped there, separated from his beautiful daughter. And now Jefferson is, again, crazy as hell.
Heather's having all kinds of sound effect issues this week, folks. Just sit back and enjoy it.
Hey, I'm trying to keep myself on target. So, you know, Once Upon a Time, excellent episode. We are both. I think the show really, you know, while they stayed away from the Enchanted Forest till the very end, they set us up really well because we have Regina and Snow, because that would have been an even hairier tale than having Snow and Emma wandering through the Enchanted Forest together, caught by Mulan.
Can I just say that Mulan boloed Mary Margaret and it was hilarious? I mean, she, she knocked her the F out.
I'm a little concerned that she knocked her ass out so hard she's going to forget that she's Snow White again. I mean, did she knock the snow right out of her?
She did.
And I'm sitting here looking at Emma. Emma's been a badass since we met her. But Emma's so flummoxed about where they are and what's going on. She's doing the helpless female trick.
Which is what happens to everybody who ends up in an alternate universe in the first few moments.
I would imagine so.
And we do get Cora. We do get Cora back in a great surprise appearance at the very end of the episode. And you had some news about the upcoming titles that I thought were interesting.
Oh, so next week's episode, actually, you know, this is kind of fascinating to me, is called The Lady of the Lake.
And we get Lancelot. Oh, we're talking together, folks. We do that.
Yeah, we do. We run over each other all the time. We can't help it. It's because we get so excited. But we get Lancelot next week. Lancelot's a brother. And I mean, yes, I'm going to say that. Lancelot's a brother. He's a good looking brother. I was looking at the picture of this actor and I need to go look up the actor's name.
Yes, because he was on Teen Wolf, as we know.
Yes, but I love the way in the preview that glimpse we got of him, especially when she's, you know, you see Snow White saying Lancelot of the Round Table, and he says the table isn't round anymore, or there's no more round table. And I was like, okay, is he Lancelot of the Square Table now?
Well, I thought he said not anymore, and he said it with such anger. There was this hard tick in his jawline, and I thought, what the hell did Arthur do to you?
Either way, I'm totally down with this particular twist because it's an addition to our fairy tales. It is a departure. Now, actually, it's not really a departure as much as some people might think from the Disney. You know, we've been talking a lot about Once Upon a Time relying heavily on Disney canon, and the producers have said in numerous interviews and excerpts last season that they were not just going to rely on Disney canon, even though ABC is a Disney network, Once Upon a Time is a Disney show, and Disney World doesn't have any Once Upon a Time gear the last time I was there, and I was extremely disappointed, but that's neither here nor there. But if we will recall, there is a little Disney film called The Sword in the Stone.
Yes, indeed.
So maybe we'll get to see, you know, Pig from Black Alfred.
That would be hilarious. Something interesting. The actor's name is Cinqua. I believe I'm pronouncing that right. Cinqua Walls. And he is only listed for one episode.
Oh, well, Jefferson was only listed for one episode. I think they doth protest over much, because something that fine definitely needs to be coming back. And if they kill him, if they do a Huntsman on me, I will be very upset. I'm just going to get that out there right now. I haven't even met the guy on screen. And if they pull a Huntsman, I'm going to be a little Pequod with them.
Oh, my. Pequod.
So, anyway.
Is that anything like Farquaad?
Yeah, a little Farquaad. I'll get a little Farquaad on them and send them all to the Enchanted Swamp.
Go ahead.
So after Lady of the Lake, we have the Crocodile Hook. Anyone? I just want to know if we're going to have a ticking clock all the way through the episode.
Oh, and I did go back and watch the first few minutes of episode 1 of this season, And I do admit all of the, like you said, the anachronistic items in this man's room and his complete exasperation with life as a businessman does lead me to believe that he may indeed be Peter Pan, especially because he was carrying a backpack, which I think was a nod to this kind of youthful exuberance that he once had. So if you're right, ding ding, extra credit points for Heather. You guys send her cup, right? There's got to be a prize for being right. I don't know what it is, but we'll come up with something.
Well, honey, if I had a prize for being right every time I got something right on Vampire Diaries, I'd be so wealthy. I should have a lunch date with Ian Somerhalder. I'll take it.
Well, you know, we tried to get Monique to hook you up, and now she's moved on to some other show.
Ugh, parenting, all that other.
Monique is my sister, guys, and she worked on the Vampire Diaries set for the whole first season, actually. So she knows all of those guys. No, we will not be telling you any secrets.
No, tear. Okay, and then coming up after that is The Doctor, which I'm going to go out on a limb here. Not that it's a very far walk. And say that The Doctor is going to be our inside look at Whale, played by the deliciously devilish David Anders, of much genre fame, going back to Alias and Julian Sark.
Yes.
And the much maligned and very dead John Gilbert on The Vampire Diaries. And then following that will be an episode called Tallahassee. Woo woo! Birthplace of Heather Long. And that's my origin story on the show. But we're going to move on from Once Upon a Time. I'll throw this out there. Tallahassee, totally betting that it's Emma's origin, or at least a background look at where Emma came from, because we know she grew up in foster care. We know she had a troubled youth. And why not? Tallahassee sounds like a rocking place to be if you're a troubled youth. And Shereen, you had a quote. You said, and I quote, it's going to be my quote this week. So take it away.
Yes, we have a feature called Wish I'd Said That. And this is something that Regina says to David / Charming. I will not take parenting advice from a man who put his daughter in a box and shipped her to Maine.
It was a sweet burn. The funny part is Regina, as selfish and self-involved as Regina can be, that's the kind of line that only she could truly deliver.
Yes, it was great. And I couldn't help but hear inklings of Stephen King in shipping someone's child to Maine.
And that just takes it to a whole new disturbing level.
Which leads us into Haven. See that segue? I'm smooth, baby. I'm smooth. What? Smoothness.
Haven, speaking of Maine. Very well done. What the fuck is up with Audrey?
I don't know, but she's a stone cold killer.
Well, yeah, she's a little bit. But the thing is back in first season, I had a hard time with this show because Audrey was so meh. I mean, I'm not kidding. She was meh. This stuff would happen. Crazy ass shit would be going on all around her. And she took blasé to like a stoned level.
Well, dude, I mean, she was just born like 5 days before it happened.
Well, and I'm getting that. I mean, but does she have a shelf life? Because now that we know she's got 43 days left, she's starting to expire in front of us because she's shutting down.
She is becoming a lot darker. And it's weird because on the surface, she's placid.
Exactly. But, I mean, there's like nothing going on.
And then all of a sudden she says, by the way, Duke, I brought you out here to these woods, you know, because I want you to kill this dude. And then in true villain form, she gives him a perfect justification.
Well, and honestly, though, I can't really fault it because this dude was sucking the organs out of all of his kids. And that's like a little bit on the gross side.
And his father did the same to him.
He survived it.
Well, that's how you get the disease, though. Remember, they were saying, folks, we are kind of going backwards, but that's how these conversations go, and that's why you join us. So anyway, the setup is that people are getting their organs sucked out, and then there's another organ on the ground next to them that is the same organ as the organ that was in them, but it's not their organ, like a pair of lungs laying beside your dead body, but you don't have any wounds. But those lungs lying beside your dead body are not your lungs, but they are diseased lungs. Freaky. Then the people who get away from this mysterious attacker, all of a sudden, they need new organs because they go into organ failure. What?
You call this trouble really fucked up?
I mean, yo, and when you see how the guy who has the trouble sucks the organs out of people,
Oh, that gave me SG-1 flashbacks.
That was so gold, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was gold, gross. And I mean, it was, ew. For me, I get why Audrey did what she did. The Duke was actually surprised. I was looking at Duke going, honey, I'm sorry, really, are you not paying attention?
Well, he was surprised because he felt like she needed him. When we get into a place where we think someone we love has us around because they need us, and then we find out that, no, they had a purpose for us, and we start to feel like a tool in their toolbox, we tend to get a little pissed off.
And well, rightfully so. I felt bad for Nathan in this. I felt bad for Duke. I think they're both getting screwed over, and I keep flashing back to the conversation that Nathan had with his dad way back in first season before his dad fell apart and turned into a brick or whatever it was he did. His trouble was really weird too, but I'm not going to go there. Anyway, he told Nathan from the get-go, don't fall for her.
Yes.
She has a purpose. Don't fall for her. Don't get hooked on her. And we know that our newspaper brothers, one of them, definitely fell for her when she was Lucy because he still wants to help her.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, they have all these secrets and they're not sharing. And I don't know. I really am looking at Audrey and I don't want her to go into that emotionless place because it's so hard to connect with her as a character when she does that. I understand it from a writing perspective. I do not like it from a viewing perspective.
I've got you. But you know what it may do? It may serve a really good purpose in that it makes us that much more connected to our two guys.
Oh, I'm extremely connected to our two guys. I love her with Nathan, but I love Duke even more. And I feel so bad for Duke that he's getting the shaft on all sides in this.
I do love Pirate Duke. He's so cute and sweet and special.
He is. Well, the great thing about Duke is that Duke, everyone accuses Duke of being so incredibly self-serving, and he's not.
At all. He's such a sweetheart. He's one of those bad boys with a heart of gold.
He really is. He truly is. And I think he gets short shrift. So I'm really hoping they give some acknowledgement to that. And I think Audrey really needs to apologize to him.
I think she does. Yeah. And I think she's feeling it. I also think she's feeling the weight of leaving. And there's something in her that does not want to leave them with a mess. She feels like she's got to wrap these things up before she goes.
Well, absolutely. And she was just starting to really let herself feel all those things for Nathan. And I think she's pulling back, particularly, okay, she doesn't have enough information about the Colorado kid to be making these leaps that she's making. But she is assuming that whatever happened to the Colorado kid, which was the big mystery, that's the actual name of the book that this is based off of by Stephen King, happened because Lucy loved him. And then, of course, we've got this mysterious guy who's hunting, who's also looking for the Colorado kid. We know the Colorado kid isn't actually dead. My big question, I have to go back and watch this, was the Colorado kid actually a kid or was he an actual adult? Because if Lucy was in love with a little boy, that's gross.
Well, yeah. I kept thinking he was a child or a teenager. I was not thinking it was a man, but...
Well, we know Duke was in that picture with her. We know Duke was there that day as a child. That was another reveal they did a while back, and then they kind of have dropped, and I don't know if that's going to come back up or not. And we know that there's the weird house on the island in the woods that shows up and then is gone, and it ate the other Audrey's memories.
The real Audrey. Yeah,
the actual Audrey Parker, upon whom the template of this Audrey has been born.
I like her, by the way.
Hmm?
I like her.
I liked her a lot. I wish they'd actually kept the dual Audreys. I kind of like the new psychologist character they got running around. I think she's interesting.
Yeah.
I also think she got Audrey's number, but I also think she knows more than she's telling.
Oh, a lot more. And I'm waiting for her to do something evil and twisty. It's only a matter of time.
Well, I'm wondering if she's the reason Audrey disappears in 46 days or 43 days or whatever the countdown is at right now.
She may well be her keeper. And it'll be interesting to see if Audrey's boss comes back because we know her boss was fake.
We knew he knew something. So is her trouble, you know, and I've got to wonder, she only comes there when the troubles come. So is she linked to those troubles? Does the meteor shower mark the end of this period of the troubles?
There has to be some kind of link. But we will sit here and meander on about this because it is so complex. And we haven't had enough of the show to know whether we can trust the writers that everything that they've written is true. So some things may not even be clues. So we'll have to really watch this to wait and see.
Oh, yeah. So speaking of waiting and seeing, we have reached the third, or is it the fourth episode?
The fourth. Yes, the fourth.
and I'm absolutely still watching Revolution for Billy Burke's Miles.
And I am bored.
I'm sitting here and I watch the show and I like the different aspects of Miles' story. I like that he's a complex, very gray character, that he was behind the founding of the Monroe Republic, that he motivated Monroe to get started.
Yes, I think he set him free. I think that he broke down Monroe's moral walls, and behind those moral walls was a completely amoral person, where Miles is a very different sort. His morality is a soldier's morality. He has a general's morality, which is to do the best you can to protect people, which sometimes gets confused with villainy, where Monroe is, he's gone all the way over.
Well, yeah, especially because Miles has pointed out to Charlie time and time again. I hate that character, but moving on. Miles has pointed out to Charlie time and time again, when somebody attacks you, you don't leave them there to come back after you again.
You know, it's one of my favorite things, because if you guys are familiar with it, you may not be because I'm older than I sound. There was a miniseries called Shaka Zulu years ago, I think in the 80s. Yeah, good stuff. It was the story of one of the great warlords of Africa, of the
Zulu tribe.
There was the Zulu tribe, Shaka Zulu. Hello, Shireen, wake up. Okay.
Think about that, you're not alone.
Right. Well, one of the things that his mother always told him, and this was a key scene in Shaka Zulu, she said, "And Shaka, this is the last time you are leaving an enemy behind." And that flavored his entire life. He never left an enemy behind, and it led to his downfall. So this idea that Miles is teaching Charlie that same thing, it interests me a great deal.
That does interest me. Like I said, we're four episodes in. I'm still watching. So they're doing something right.
Not for me. But at least there's those couple of points that I am interested in. I agree with you. I think Heather is completely right, guys. Billy Burke is this show. Without him, there is absolutely nothing. I care not a whit for anybody. There was a major death. I cared not at all. And I'll tell you,
sorry, Maggie. She went to the dogs, and I sat there and went, "Well, that's sad."
But one thing that I do want to point out is that Charlie is boring as hell, but her baby brother Daniel, that's the storyline that I would prefer to follow. This kid is ingenious. He's like MacGyver in an unpowered world. This boy knows how to manipulate people, he knows how to pick a lock. This kid, I like a lot.
You actually can see where Miles is related to her younger brother. I'm not seeing how Miles is related to Charlie.
She's annoying.
She's very annoying. Also, for those of you who are not aware and do not follow the news, Revolution was picked up for a full season. It was a premiere series. It only had 13 episodes originally. Now it will probably get the full 22, I think it is.
Yes, and there will continue to be moments of great stupidity, as witnessed in last week's episode, where the sniper goes on the roof to face the militia, and he doesn't shoot the leader, folks, while the leader's standing in plain view. No, he shoots the little peons on the edges. Always shoot the head, okay?
Yeah, off the head, theoretically, the snake will die, but if it doesn't, at least it's just thrashed around looking like an idiot.
And two, Miles has a sword. A pack of wild dogs attack. Heather is a huge dog lover. I am a dog lover as well. One thing that you know with a pack of wild dogs is that if you have a weapon, you stand. Because if you run and you don't have somewhere, they will chase you. And if you don't have anywhere you can get to fast, you will be torn to shreds. Miles is standing there with a sword and several civilians, and he tells them to run. A military man would never do that. He would have taken out his sword and cut those dogs to shreds. Now, the reason they probably didn't do it is because nobody likes to see a dog die.
No, and that's a really sticky place to go. Although, I could make the argument that Miles told everybody to run because he had more of a chance to get Charlie away if the dogs were chasing all those other people.
Yeah, but they ran in a big old group.
Yeah, that's because they're stupid.
And we come back to why Revolution doesn't work for me.
I will say I did like the fact that they explained to us why there were no steam powered boats, because that did kind of bother me. Coal is a viable energy source, dirty or not, bad or not. We have only had electricity in this country for 120 some odd years now. It's not like we didn't have a power source. Steam powered engines, coal fueled engines, they got us across the nation.
Yes.
and around the world. Where are the sailing ships with the big sails on them? You know, the kind, like the big rickety boats that Columbus found America in? I'm just saying.
I don't know, but I know there's about 15 of them in Baltimore Harbor right now. So there you go.
So, I'm just saying.
Yeah, and again, we come back to why revolution does not work for me. There's too much stupid.
Billy Burke on there, I'm good. If Billy Burke goes, Heather's out. I'm sorry. I know even my Minnie likes to watch it. It's a good YA show for her. It's not as especially deep as it needs to be, but for a 9 o'clock show that's up against shows like Castle and Hawaii 5-0, they need to dig in a little deeper.
I agree. So let's talk about the big premieres this week because we are going a little bit over.
Here we are doing our short show, and we're going to go over. So, shocker! All right, well, let's do a really fast rundown for the big premieres this week, because we are going to be talking about these three big shows. I guarantee you I will have a lot to say about the return of The Vampire Diaries for season 4.
I guarantee it.
I have high hopes for this show. I freely admit that there are some disappointing moments for me in season 3. I thought season 3 was a little uneven compared to the first two seasons. Also, it had the big wanking disappointment of Elena choosing Stefan over Damon. What the fuck? But not going to get caught up in that because Heather could go on that for days. Also coming up is Arrow, the new series on the CW being paired with Supernatural. I think that's an awesome, awesome matchup. Arrow, of course, focusing on Green Arrow, and he's hot, so I'll definitely be tuning in, at least for that first episode.
Yes, and from what I hear, Arrow does what CW does best. Supernatural hints, hot guys, and lots of action.
And totally works for me. And then finally, Beauty and the Beast. Of the three shows that I'm expecting this week, I do not have high hopes for Beauty and the Beast. I only have my fingers crossed that it doesn't totally suck.
Most interesting is it is a true remake. These characters have the same names as the original characters, although the backstories differ slightly. And they've added a backstory to Catherine where her mother was killed in a very strange murder plot. And she was saved by a beast man.
Well, and that sort of gives that nod to the original series.
Yes.
Either way, again, not high hopes, but just hoping it doesn't suck. If it surprises me, I will be the first to stand up and go, woot, woot!
Well, on the woot, woot note, here is the rundown where we do give you our log lines for a series that we shan't discuss on this week's episode. I'll kick it off with Grimm. There's two. Kill my man and I'll kick your ass, or I die for him while you take a long ride on a short bus.
Alpha's wrapped up its season with Frozen turning into a bit of a badass.
Nice.
And I'm really liking that changeup. There is a line between Senator Burton and Rosen that begins with Senator Burton warding him off, going, your team is more dangerous than the Alphas they go after. And you are the worst. You use them to assault innocents under the pretense of justice. And Rosen just smiles at him and says, yes, Senator, you are right. My team is dangerous. And so am I. From a fan's perspective, it's about mother effing time that DeRozan got a little more dangerous and stopped being so pansy-assed about the fact that he is dealing with alphas.
That was good stuff. On Fringe, I have the log line, I may be lethal, but my mom really kicks ass, and she doesn't need to put her boots on to do it. And wrapping up with the season premiere of Merlin, I love Merlin the way that Heather loves Vampire Diaries. And so this is an especially poignant logline this week on the rundown. And I will say this. How can a season premiere with dragons, hot knights, magic, and evil queens be this? Well, oh, I'm sorry. I fell asleep.
I don't know. And I don't really want to find out now. Well, this has been a great episode, but we need to pause for a moment and take our moment of silence for a show called Stargate SG-1. Huh. It launched on Showtime and aired there for 5 seasons before moving over to the SIFI network for another 5 seasons, giving it a whopping 10 years. And they then gave it 2 follow-up films, The Arc of Truth, which tied up the Ori storyline, and Continuum, which was probably one of the better action-oriented stories for the SG-1 team. It starred Richard Dean Anderson, Michael Shanks, Christopher Judge, and Amanda Tapping, as well as later cast members Ben Browder, Claudia Black, Beau Bridges, Don Davis.
Yay, I loved him.
I adored him. I adored everything about this show. I watched it religiously for 10 years. I rewatch it. I own all 10 seasons on DVD and the movies. I periodically have these pinges of missing it, and I will go and I will put all the DVDs on and I will watch it from beginning to end. Everything about this series totally appealed to my action, adventure, romance, exploration, mythology.
Humor.
Great, great, great humor. And seriously, if you go back to the very beginning, Michael Shanks as Daniel Jackson is this sort of dorky little guy who's sweet and academic. And by the end of it, he is this butch, kick your ass. He can handle a weapon. And if he looks at his buddy Jack and says, we need to kill it, Jack's going to kill it because Daniel doesn't ever say that.
Right. And a guy who ascended came back.
Twice.
Yes. He was a badass and super cute.
Oh, he was so very fine.
But my love will always belong to Jack.
Jack was awesome.
And we mentioned MacGyver earlier. And of course, same guy in two fantastic turns. You really, if you've never watched Stargate SG-1, if you gave it up after Showtime, go back and watch it. It's a great series.
And like so many of these shows we keep having a moment of silence for, it is available in streaming on Netflix, all 10 seasons. So totally worth the watch. In the meanwhile, you can catch Michael Shanks on a new show that he came on this summer called Saving Hope. It's with Erica Durance, who played Lois Lane on Smallville, and Daniel Gillies, who plays my lovely Elijah from The Vampire Diaries.
We love Elijah.
Oh, bring him back. So thank you, Stargate SG-1, for 10 fabulous years.
Yes. You know what? There was one quote that I forgot that I wanted to give you from Grimm, and this is a good quote. Well, Nick says to Monroe regarding Monroe's lethally vicious big bad wolf ex-girlfriend, did you know she killed another guy tonight?
Is that the news? She slept with somebody else?
Right. Yeah, he's dead. What do you think's going to happen to you?
Pay attention to what happened to the last guy that was in your position. Oh, that takes me back to Maverick, and I was the last guy in that position.
Nasty.
Well, this is Heather Long.
And Shereen Nicole.
Thanks for hanging out.